I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. Oh, and I guess I should say that the current temperature is 83 degrees. On the show today, a couple of guests who are affiliated with the Miller Legacy Chorus and soloists who are giving a concert on Sunday evening. Miller, in this case, referring to William Miller, who was for a long time professor of voice at the University of Illinois School of Music and then kept teaching for many, many years after that, and has quite a list of devoted followers who started this tradition a while back. We'll hear about that. And here are some excerpts from Mr. Miller himself, and also a little bit about the teaching of singing. Wherever the conversation takes us, that's where we'll go on Live and Local today here on FM 90.9. Baritone Nathan Gunn, along with pianist Kevin Murphy, an arrangement of the traditional tune Shenandoah. Lee Musiker was the arranger, and I played Nathan's voice specifically today because he is probably one of the more illustrious students of William Miller, who taught at the University of Illinois for 30-some years, 1940s to 1975. He retired, but then he kept teaching privately, and in fact it was as a private teacher technically that Nathan studied with Mr. Miller, although he was a student at the University of Illinois School of Music. That was an interesting arrangement on its own, but it also says something about him as a teacher and about what other people thought of him as a teacher. And William Miller, his Legacy Chorus is performing Sunday night at 7:30 at University Place Christian Church on South Wright Street in Champaign. And they've been doing these concerts for a while now. Here with us on Live and Local today are Richard Hurdle, who was himself, actually both of our guests today were students of William Miller. Richard Hurdle teaches voice privately in his own studio and actually used to work for WILL for some years as our traffic director. And Leonard Rummery now is a lawyer in private practice in Monticello, former district attorney for Piatt County, I think, and also a former faculty member at the University of Illinois School of Music in the choral department. Quite an interesting resume right there. And is directing the chorus. And thank you both for joining us on the show today.
It's our pleasure.
Who wants to talk about the legacy of the Legacy Chorus? Because I've been hearing about it for a number of years, but I couldn't tell you how long now.
Well,
this is Dick Hurdle.
I'll speak to that. We did our first concert as the Legacy Chorus in 2002. Mr. Miller died in 1998, so it was a gestation period. But what triggered this idea was a concert that had been done in Mr. Miller's honor in 1996 by the Parkland Camerata under the direction of Sandy Chabot. She also had studied with Mr. Miller, and the focus of this concert was music having to do with angels and celestial things, and the major work was The Company of Heaven by Benjamin Britten. And so during this concert, most of the people who performed had some connection with Mr. Miller, but the Camerata itself was not connected with him. But the soloists, most of them were, including me. And at the end of the concert, which was quite a lovely concert from my point of view, I didn't know this work until she decided to do it. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. At the end of the concert, she asked all of the Miller students, former and present, to come up to the front, and we all sang unrehearsed An die Musik of Schubert. In unison, in a kind of moderate key, and I was totally blown away by the sound. It made some sense that when you get people who have all been trained in a similar fashion, that their approach to making sound would be similar. And standing in the middle of that group with that sound around me, I just couldn't forget what that felt like and what it sounded like. And I thought, you know, if we could do that with no rehearsal in unison, what could a chorus that has been rehearsed do if they had were drawn from that same pool of people? So finally, that was 1996, you know, 6 years later, I thought, you know, I have to do this. I really have to do this. So I started asking around among former Miller students, of course, my students, and Sandy Chabot had left the community by then, but there were still a number of her students around, and so we just threw it open to anyone who had the Miller connection back then. And so Julie Gunn was one of the first conductors, and Haejong Lee, who had been the choral director at my church. They each did half of the program for the first Miller concert. And there had been a scholarship fund set up at the time of Mr. Miller's funeral. And that had been set up at my church, University Place Christian Church. And we thought, well, you know what? We could do this as a benefit and add a little bit of money to that fund. Some of it had been used. And so that's where we started in 2002. At that point, I didn't know if we would ever do another one. My plans had not gone that far out. I just thought, well, this would be a really cool thing to do. And we rehearsed Wednesday evenings during the summer when most of these singers were not involved with their church choirs. And the issue always with a chorus that meets in the summer is that you're going to have people who have scheduled vacations, and so you'll have somebody missing 2 weeks here and 2 weeks there. It's a little bit of a challenge to get everything together, but it worked pretty well.
And Leonard is sitting there grinning and saying, a mild challenge, yeah.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. So at any point, after we did the concert, there were many people who had sung in it who said, are we going to do this again next year? And I thought, well, I hadn't planned that far ahead. Why don't we give it a year? Let's do it every other year if you're really interested. So we did one in 2004, one in 2002, 2004. And then the intention was to do another one in 2006. And it just turned out that my sister was in hospice during that year, and I was making many trips up to Madison, Wisconsin. So I said, well, let's put it off a year. And so we did 2007, which was the last one. Leonard conducted that whole concert. Judy Webb was the pianist organist. And we have that same situation this time. So maybe we'll keep doing this every 2 years if we have people who are interested. We did change one major thing for this concert, and that is only half of the concert will be choral. That makes it a little bit more manageable with the rehearsal time that we have with people missing to actually bring everybody up to speed. The other half, we have a number of duets, we have a quartet, we have a few solos. Many of those people are my students. Some of them are still Bill Miller students. There are some still around. And so we put it together that way, and it's interesting how many people who are in these choruses express to me how much they've enjoyed doing this during the summer, because they don't necessarily have another outlet for choral music during the summer. So we're just happy to do this and happy to add a little money to the scholarship fund. We have given scholarships to 7 or 8 people. I can't remember exactly. A couple singers, a couple trumpet players who were U of I graduate students in trumpet, some high school and maybe even one junior high person who needed some money to do the summer youth music program at the U of I. So we've helped a number of people. And so we're doing this because we really enjoy doing it, but the fact that we can raise some money for the scholarship fund is gravy. We love to do it.
Well, and it makes some sense to me anyway to have a soloist component to a concert, because after all, when you're studying voice, you're singing solo.
Right.
That may or may not ever be your professional intention, but that's what you're doing at that time. And so to have some folks
seemed like a natural to me.
Yeah.
It's just strayed a little bit from the original idea of that, you know, the feeling of having all these wonderful singers together singing. But yes, I agree with you. Mr. Miller would love that we're doing this. And his daughter, Nancy Jameson, has sung with us not the first time, I think, but the last two times. So she's very involved in the scholarship committee. She and I and Judy Webb are the committee, and we take a look at the applications and make some decisions about who should get how much money. We frequently can't give all the money that the person needs for whatever, but when we can help out, we feel really good about it.
Sure. We're talking with Richard Hurdle and Leonard Rummery. Richard giving a bit of the history of the Miller Legacy Chorus and giving a concert this Sunday along with soloists at University Place Christian Church in Champaign. And Leonard is the conductor of that. One of you talk about Bill Miller as a singer. I mean, before he, as is often the case with people who end up teaching at college, not always, but often, they had some professional career before that happened. I'm completely ignorant of his professional career.
Well, actually, his professional career was interesting and colorful in a way, because he sang in radio when radio was live. And he was in the mixed quartet for, let me see if I can remember the name of the show. Was it not Campbell? It was a music hour sponsored by a rather well-known sponsor in Chicago. And so every week the quartet sang. They sang a range of music, a lot of the popular song of the day, 40s and 50s. At the same time, occasionally he would sing a role at the Lyric Opera. I mean, he was there. And so that was not the major part of his career, but he was doing that. And he was teaching in Chicago part-time. And at one point, he had friends who were teaching voice here at the U of I who invited him to come down. They really needed to have at least another part-time voice teacher. And he agreed to come down and teach one day a week. And then he'd go back up to Chicago, and he was singing in a rather large church there. So every Sunday he was committed to being there. He was successful, and the people here really wanted him to come down full-time. So eventually, after a number of years of doing kind of part-time, they convinced him to come here and to give up his career in Chicago and his studio in Chicago and come down here and teach full-time. And of course, while he was here on faculty, he sang with university groups and sang recitals all the time, just like every other faculty member did. So
do you think that the university drew him down because he had had a reputation at that point as a teacher, or because of his reputation as a singer in Chicago, or some combination?
Both, yeah, both. By that time, he had taught in Chicago enough that people were getting responses. His students were doing well. And part of it was that the faculty members here knew him. They knew what kind of man he was. It wasn't just about the teaching and the singing. It was that he was a really good person. and someone who really cared about the students and had enough good experience at that point that they felt he was going to be good for the school, which obviously he turned out to be.
Yeah, apparently. Well, you brought along a disc of recordings by William Miller, you know, from when he was singing solos. And why don't you introduce the one you suggested we start with, called Silent Worship?
Well, this piece, they took the tune from Handel's opera Ptolemy. In Italian, it's Non lo dirò colabro. But they didn't use an English translation of it. They did an English version, which was had no relationship to the original text whatsoever. But a quite lovely piece, and he sang it and recorded it with orchestra back in the day, as they say. And so some years later, I was thinking about that tune, and so I did some research and found out the original. And so on our concert on Sunday night, one of Mr. Miller's students, who is now a student of mine, is going to sing the original Italian and the version called Silent Worship, which Mr. Miller did.
And this was recorded, do you have a date on this?
No. Unfortunately, for all of these recordings, which you see, they were, I suppose you could say, pirated from Mr. Miller's own collection by one of his students who recorded them onto a cassette. And then, fortunately, one of my students, who is very adept at all the digital mastering, took that original. Some of the cuts are very scratchy and very bad quality, and he cleaned it up a lot. But the one that we're going to hear with orchestra actually was done professionally. It was recorded professionally to start out with, so it didn't degrade as much when it was taken to cassette.
Okay, so we don't know the age of the voice at this point.
Well, I would guess it was probably when he was not more than 40. He was relatively young. I can kind of tell just by the sound of the voice, because I knew his voice from the age of 68 on.
So pretty much should be about his prime.
I think so, yes.
It's William H. Miller singing a version of, English version of aria from Ptolemy and the opera by George Frederick Handel here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Glory of golden hair.
William Miller singing from Handel's Ptolemy, English version of the Italian original, Silent Worship, the name of that English version, with an unnamed accompanying orchestra from an unnamed period of time, but we're guessing sometime in his 40s, which would mean what? When was that? When was he born, you know?
I've got it here.
We can actually figure it out because he...
He died in 1998, and he was 91, so
yeah.
That would have been
1907, I think.
Seven? Yep. 1907 he was born. So,
yeah, so maybe...
So, been
so not long after, right about the time he started teaching at the University of Illinois, probably.
Could have been, yeah.
That this may have been recorded.
Yeah.
We enjoy speculation. That's
well, unfortunately, the person who had access to Mr. Miller's personal recordings wasn't too worried about documenting what he was taping. He just wanted it for his own use. And then, fortunately, when we found out that he had this, we said, you know, will you share it after Mr. Miller died? And so then we put together this CD and made it available to his students. And there were many who were, you know, just enthralled to hear some of the early singing, especially.
Sure. We're talking about William Miller, longtime voice professor at the University of Illinois, retired from there in 1975, kept teaching pretty much up until his death, didn't he?
Yes.
At the age of 91, 1998, and the Miller Legacy Chorus and Soloists giving a concert in his memory this coming Sunday evening at 7:30, University Place Christian Church on South Wright Street in Champaign. Richard Hurdle and Leonard Rummery with us today, both of them students of Bill Miller's, and participating in that concert. And Leonard conducting the chorus. Our broadcast today on FM 90.9 here on Live and Local is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karastan Broadloom and Rug dealer at 11 West Port Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. Leonard, what do you... two questions for you, really. You made some comments while we were listening about the sound of his voice. What do you think was particularly remarkable about him as a singer? And then what do you think was remarkable about him as a teacher that enables a legacy chorus to exist? I mean, not every voice teacher leaves a legacy of that sort.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's kind of interesting that I didn't study with Mr. Miller. when I came to the university in 1976 or 77, pretty much everybody said, oh, you've got to study with Mr. Miller. And he was teaching in Mahomet because he was off the faculty by then and teaching privately. And as a new faculty member, I really couldn't leave my office and drive to Mahomet and come back. So I never got around to hooking up with him. But virtually every person that I ran into said, you need to study with Mr. Miller. So I didn't even meet him ever, actually. And when I came to study with Dick, I found out that he was a student of Mr. Miller's. So it was the closest I could get to Mr. Miller himself after these 20 years or 30 years. I don't remember how long it was. But in terms of the recording that we just heard, I was so impressed by the ease of the voice. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of tension in the voice at all, very natural production. I especially was taken by the easy control that he had at the ends of phrases. They're not chopped off and they don't die out to nothing. It's right in the middle. It just goes until it stops and it's the tone continues beautifully. I was really happy to hear that again. I did buy this recording, I think, when Dick produced it, but I couldn't find my copy, and I'm glad to have heard that again. He was quite evidently a wonderful singer.
Well, then I'll put the question to you, Dick. Since you did study with him, I just assumed that you both had. But here's the legacy. You know, like we talk about now, if somebody takes piano lessons from somebody who studied with somebody who studied with somebody who studied with Franz Liszt.
Right.
You
trace
know,
back to Liszt.
And this
right.
doesn't go that far.
Right.
So what was special about him as a teacher? What's the big deal?
Well, I want to say that maybe the first most important thing about him was what he was as a man. He was very loving. He was autocratic in some ways, but he believed so completely in God. He was such a firm Christian that it permeated everything he did, including his relationship with the university and other faculty. And anyone who's been on the faculty knows that there are some pitfalls. So he negotiated those pitfalls in a very graceful way.
You mean there's pitfalls with working at the university?
Yes.
Not with working with Bill Miller, necessarily.
No. But as far as his teaching style, he at some point said to me, I want you to check your brain at the door. I want you to just listen to what I say and react. Just respond. Do not think through it. Do not analyze. Well, I'm a very analytical person, so that was hard for me. But it was what I needed. And so this is how perceptive he is. He gets to know you pretty quickly. He realizes where your method of learning might be getting in the way. And he wanted me to react spontaneously. And it took a lot of concentration for me to not analyze. But I learned to do it. I learned to function more freely. You hear in that recording the kind of freedom he had, and that freedom only comes with spontaneity. Now, sometimes you have to work on something in great detail for a while before you can achieve that kind of spontaneity. But he was listening, watching, paying attention. One of his greatest strengths was his ability to teach breathing. And it wasn't just how do you take a breath in, but what do you do with it after you have it. And he was always talking about gentleness in the breath, about balance, so that you are not pressing the tone, making it sound harsh. He would take his little flashlight and he would say, all right, now come here and look. And he would flash the flashlight, or you'd take it and say, now see what's happening inside my mouth. And then he would say, all right, now you take the flashlight and you look in the mirror. And so he had a knowledge of articulatory phonetics for someone who had never studied it as a separate study, that was quite good. And so I learned a lot about where the tongue should be, where the palate should be at any particular time for any particular sound. He devised exercises out of phrases of songs. So if you were having trouble with a particular phrase, he would say, okay, let's take this phrase and let's put it down a third. Let's have you sing it here. And he would help you, especially if you were having trouble with a high note, which is, we all have some trouble at some point with high notes. And he would say, okay, now look, the reason you're having trouble with this note is because you're not doing the beginning consonant with the kind of strength it needs. So he'd say, all right, now take it down, try it here, sing through that consonant. Then he'd move it up a half step. We'd try it again. And eventually he'd get you doing the high note right, and immediately you would feel the difference. You would know right away. So I've built my own teaching on that, except I've not waited until a student has a problem with a particular phrase in a song. I have written hundreds of vocal exercises which work on those technical issues before the problems arise in songs, or at least concurrent, so that I'm using the concepts that he gave me all the time in my own teaching, because they were so rich in helping me that I know they can help this person and that person. So in 30 years of teaching, I've taken what he taught me and gone the next mile, let's say.
Well, and that's sort of an interesting, it's interesting to hear you talk about it, because you go from his suggesting that you don't analyze, but yet he's clearly analyzing.
Exactly.
And now as a teacher, you have to analyze what's going on in somebody's voice, which particularly for voice teachers, But in general, for teachers of any wind instrument, has always fascinated me, because you can't really see inside.
Exactly.
You know, and well, you can only feel to a certain degree. If you're teaching violin, everything is out front. I mean, the musical intuition is not out front. So any stringed instrument.
The winds, I mean, normally, like with woodwinds, you can see where
the
keys
are. You
can
see the fingers.
You can see the fingers.
But it's all in the breath.
Yeah.
Really.
A lot.
And the embouchure and the little muscles that you can't see and so
on.
So how do you figure that out, what's going on, and then transfer it to somebody else? You have to be analytical.
A lot of it is from the sound that you hear. With some experience, you can tell that a certain sound means this is going on inside. It's not an exact science. But what I've learned over the years, and again, this is all based on what he taught me, what you see on the face of a singer gives you a lot of information about what's going on inside. Singers have trouble learning some of these things because they can't really feel very well where the back of the palate is, the soft palate or the velum. There are very few nerve endings back there. And so we gradually learn a kind of a gestalt, a whole sense of what's going on in the mouth. And that, for most people, will lead them to the point where they can reproduce the right sensations. One of the reasons this is difficult is that it's different for every note and every vowel.
Sure.
And think about all the different combinations of vowel and pitch that you can have in a voice. But with repetition, one learns what feels right with feedback from the outside. So I'm giving feedback. Mr. Miller was always about the tone quality, about the pitch, if that's a problem. We use the mirror. Because when you don't have the teacher there giving you feedback, there's a lot that you can learn from watching what you're doing. If you know what to look for on the face, you can see a lot of wrong things, and you can see the things that are right. So, yes, I certainly have gone where he would say, this is what you do. One example, as far as the lip position and the jaw opening, of course, the jaw opening depends upon the height of pitch. So as higher you go, the more open you have to be. And it also is determined by the vowel, because there are more closed vowels and there are more open vowels, so forth. But he would say, I want the bite the apple look. So if you're going to bite an apple, what you do is, of course, you get your lips out of the way or you're going to bite them. So he would demonstrate, you know, it's like this, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, okay. So my lips are not covering my teeth anymore. Ooh, clue. So that's the kind of thing you can watch for in a mirror. You can certainly watch for tension. There are certain tensions in the face that are useful, and there are many that are counterproductive. The good news is that we can control the muscles of the tongue, the palate to some degree, the back wall of the mouth, which is the oropharynx, the part of the throat, and lips. We can control them to a good extent once we learn how, and then keep the control, the conscious control, away from the throat, because anything that you do controlling the larynx usually is negative.
That's where the freedom and forget about it comes in.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the most significant control over the larynx that we have is the flow of the breath and the regulation of the pressure of the breath. If that is out of balance, then you're going to have problems. So balancing it all out is just a constant battle. I mean, even for professionals, even for people who sing all the time, when they learn new music, they have to get all those things back in balance. And they might not be right away when the first time they sing something if the music is difficult.
Because they're focusing on something
notes,
else, and
rhythms,
then they go back to
words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear another example of how it's supposed to be done, right? We're talking with Richard Hurdle and Leonard Rummery about the upcoming concert this Sunday of the Miller Legacy Chorus and Soloists. William Miller is the Miller of reference here, a longtime University of Illinois voice faculty member and private teacher long after that. So I think we picked here something from Leoncavallo's Pagliacci. You want to say anything about this, or?
I think it speaks for itself.
Okay, or sings for itself
sings
in
for
this
itself.
Case. Once again, William Miller from we're not sure when in his career, and we don't know with whom.
During his Chicago career, I'm quite sure.
During the Chicago time, okay.
Yeah.
So probably in the 40s, most likely. 30s, 40s, O Colombina of Pagliacci, William Miller, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Columbina, open wide thy window high, high, pine and sigh. Longing to hear thee and be near thee as the hours go by. Oh, show thy pretty face to me, so dear thou art. Oh, take my heart. Ah, do not vex me, tease and perplex me. I cannot live without thy loving heart. Oh, without thy loving heart. Oh, come and be thy window open wide to me. I sing to thee, a star above me, come down and love me. See here alone I sigh. For love me.
William Miller ringing out the high notes there. O Colombina from Pagliacci of Leoncavallo. So, Dick, do we assume that this was probably from a radio performance? Or is that...
Could have been, or it could have been opera.
Not safe to say.
Because he did some opera in Chicago.
Which was done more often in English then, I gather.
Back then, now. It was... Yeah. Yeah. In fact, not only was that more common back then, but Mr. Miller really believed in... doing opera in English. When he first came to the University of Illinois, I can't remember the name of the opera. Was it Zerner?
I couldn't tell you.
I think that was his name.
I wasn't alive.
Yeah, yeah, I was almost alive. He really believed in doing opera in English. And so a lot of the opera productions back then at the U of I were in English. Hmm. And so that was, you know, it wasn't only Mr. Miller and this... director, but there were a lot of people who believed in it to make it more accessible to the masses.
Which still makes good sense, but of course there's arguments for the other, and we know where it is now.
Well, now
it's
we
almost
have surtitles.
Always done in, yeah, that's right.
And we have surtitles. I mean, that
should
kind
take
of...
take care of that.
Yeah, it's not an issue.
Well, I wanted to ask, actually, before I forget, let me mention that today's broadcast on FM 90.9 is made possible with support from the Sea Boat. Featuring a southern style of cooking walleye and catfish, chicken, shrimp, sandwiches, and more. Available for dine-in and carry-out. The Sea Boat, 402 West Kirby, across from Jerry's IGA in Champaign. Catering services are available at 355-9933. Before I ask Leonard Rummery about the program for this concert coming up and a little bit about choral singing versus solo singing, I do want to be sure that I give... listeners, a look here, so to speak, at some of the events this weekend that you can go out and see and hear. A lot of theater, as always in the summer. The Gondoliers, being put on by Prairie Fire Theater at Presser Hall, campus of Illinois Wesleyan University. And in fact, I believe there's some music from the Gondoliers going to be on Sunday's concert by the Miller Legacy Chorus. Also, the group called Timber Train is at Dockside Cafe at Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood. That's tonight at 5:30. A gala performance of area dance groups is at the Virginia Theater tonight in downtown Champaign. That's at 7:30. High School Musical being performed by two different organizations, the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, performance tonight at 8, tomorrow at 4 and 8, and then again on Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Also, the Springfield Muni Opera Association presenting High School Musical on stage. That's at 8:30 tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Denise LaGrasse is performing at the Farmers Market at Central Park in Minier, if I'm saying the name of that town right, I hope. That's at 5 o'clock this evening. Kathy Matea, a country and indie singer, performing tonight at the University of Illinois Research Park. She starts at 7:30, and then opening act is Ryan Groff. He's at 6:30. That's in Champaign tonight. Unnecessary Farce is at Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater in Goodfield. That's at 6 o'clock tonight and tomorrow. And then a noontime brunch show on Sunday. The ACT Theater Company is presenting All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. That's at the Perfection Coffee House in Gibson City tonight at 6:30, tomorrow at 6:30. And is it Sunday as well? It looks like not. On Saturday, the Downtown Festival of the Arts is at Neil and Main in Champaign. That starts at 10 o'clock Saturday morning. And let's see, the Blues Deacons are at Alto Vineyards in Champaign. That's at 7:30 Saturday evening. And I think I've pretty much covered what I have in our calendar. By all means, please send us what you have in your calendar. If you're involved with the organization or know about it, send us to willcalendar@illinois.edu, willcalendar@illinois.edu. And, of course, the concert by the Miller Legacy Chorus and Soloists, Sunday night at 7:30 at University Place Christian Church on South Wright Street in Champaign. William Miller was a longtime member of that church, sang in the choir, and there is a scholarship in his name at the church, and the concert is in part to benefit that scholarship and in large part to perpetuate the memory of Bill Miller. Leonard Rumery is with us here on Live and Local today. He's conducting the chorus. And Leonard, you have this interesting, former career as a choral director, which you occasionally trot out for either theater company productions or you've done church choirs and, of course, now doing this this particular chorus. And you studied with Dick Hurdle, who studied with Bill Miller, and so you've done a lot of solo work on your own voice. How does one transfer some of the concepts we've been talking about solo singing to choral singing?
When I was studying conducting now many, many years ago, it was pointed out to me that there were two basic theories of choral sound. One was called the Father Finn method, and the other was the St. Olaf Choir School method. St. Olaf Choir School method, this is the old-fashioned one from the turn of the century, the other century, basically was trying to make everybody sound the same. Everybody sounded like a flute. The Father Finn method was a more orchestrally conceived method. The idea was that some people have voices that we are going to call them oboes. Some people have string voices. Some people have the clarinet voice. Some people have trumpet voices. And so when Father Finn would try to make a sound, he would say, you put all these voices together, and like an orchestra does, it blends into an orchestra sound. Now, you have to be careful not to let the trumpets be too loud, you know. So your trumpet voices you have to watch out for. But I sort of subscribe to that theory. So
who,
the idea—
Who was Father Finn?
Father Finn was a musician. I wish I could remember what school he was at. It might have been Westminster.
Westminster Choir College.
I'm not sure. I can't remember. but in any case, I sort of subscribe to that theory. And so how that applies to people who've studied voice is this. When people study voice, and if they're successful doing it, they come out with their natural voice, especially if they study what we'll call the Miller method, now the Hurdle method, and others, I should say.
Yes, and many others.
Yes, others. But in any case, they come out with their natural-sounding voice. So what I don't feel that I need to try to make them change the tone color of their voice. I don't say, you're an oboe, but I'm going to, well, I want you to pretend you're a flute. And so the sound of a chorus that is full of these particular type of voice students kind of makes a different sound each year, depending on what the blend of the orchestral analogy voices are. Now, as you know, being an orchestra conductor, orchestras tend to have a very similar sound, but there are subtle differences. In gross terms, there are differences about the size, with the proportion of the winds to the strings and so forth. And then, of course, then there's the unique voices of each player, the people who make different sounds. I mean, no string player sounds exactly like every other string player. So I think the chorus, the people in the chorus, I just have them come in and sing the voice that you've learned to sing. I don't try to manipulate them, change them in any way. I do try to make sure that the trumpets are not too loud. Keep the voices in balance. Partially we do that by where they're placed. Seating in the chorus is difficult in the particular church that we're at, but we do the best we can with putting people in places where their voice is going to be heard to the best effect. We have so many wonderful singers in the group that it's really pretty easy to make a decent sound. I was just talking to somebody the other day and saying, when this group sings forte, it's big. It's a big sound. And really, sometimes I hadn't planned on that. The Bach, the piece that we're doing, is really probably a piece for a smaller group. And with a typical pickup choir, you might, with a larger number of people, make the sound of a smaller group. But this group makes a big sound, so I'm having some issues with the balance between the small chamber orchestra we have and the singers. So I think that that it's very interesting to have all these voice students, but I don't have to really deal with them on a one-on-one basis, because if they have good technique, it's going to sound good in the group.
Do you try, I know as a choral director, also the approach that I tend to use, or one of the approaches I tend to use, there must be some amount, I would think, of not trying to make everybody sound the same, but trying to get them to do the same thing.
Well, there's a great deal, of course, of
with vowels, for example.
Absolutely, absolutely. The right vowel is the right vowel, no matter what the tone color of your voice is, if you're doing it right. I mean, that may be a generalization, but if people are not making the correct vowel, I'm going to call it, then it's something that you do have to fix as a conductor. You have to make sure everybody's singing the same vowel. And there's another theory from one of my old teachers, which was that if everybody, talking about dynamics, if everybody sings the dynamic that is the dynamic for them, then you're tending to not lose blend. For instance, if you have a person who has a pretty small voice and they're singing forte for them, then it's going to blend pretty well with a person who has a bigger voice singing forte. You'll hear the other person more, but there won't be a tone color distinction between them because they're each producing a forte sound for themselves.
And forte is loud.
Loud, right. And that's the place it comes out most clearly, because actually I think that as people sing more and more quietly, the voices tend to be more and more similar in tone color. But when people are singing the biggest sound they make, that's where the distinctions become clear. And if they're singing, if you have one person who is singing fortissimo when it's
really loud,
yeah, when it's supposed to be forte, they're not going to blend with the other people who are singing forte for themselves. That person will stick out. If, on the other hand, they're all singing what is forte for each person, they will tend to blend more. Not a perfect system, of course, but I encourage people to not. I don't, for instance, have somebody say, "You sing that, and you sing, now you over there sing it as loud as that person," because they may not have the instrument, vocal instrument, to do that. Instead, I'll just say, as a group, find what is forte for you, and let's hear how it sounds. Sometimes we'll have people who really like to sing fortissimo all the time, yeah, and you deal with them.
I like that. You deal with them. Right. Well, let's see the product of how Leonard Rummery dealt with these people. Last year, this was from last year, right?
Two years ago.
The Miller Legacy Chorus 3. That's right, every other year. Leonard Rummery conducting here. Judy Webb was on piano on this one?
Yes.
Yes, Judy Webb is such a wonderful accompanist. Last time, I should say, we did actually mostly a cappella pieces. But on this one piece, she was accompanying us on the piano and did such a beautiful, beautiful job on the accompaniment, which is very delicate. That this year, I unfortunately burdened her with a lot more accompanied pieces. If she's listening, I hope she will forgive me.
This is music of Morten Lauritsen called Dirigeant, which means what?
Well, this is from a Rilke poem, and Dirigeant means it is so it is said, or so they say. I tried to figure out what the poem meant, but Rilke is very impenetrable, and the English translations were equally impenetrable. So I have no idea what it means.
Let's let the music describe what it means.
Absolutely.
This is the Miller Legacy Chorus from a couple of years ago, Leonard Rummery conducting, Judy Webb accompanying, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
So they say, Diriton of Rainer, the text by Rainer Maria Rilke, and the music by Morten Lauritsen, the performance by the Miller Legacy Chorus under the direction of Leonard Rummery 2 years ago, Judy Webb, the pianist, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The Miller Legacy Chorus, and this year with soloists, will perform a concert in memory of Bill Miller on Sunday at 7:30, University Place Christian Church, 403 South Wright Street in Champaign. And Mr. Miller was professor of voice at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign from the 1940s to 1975, taught for many years privately. And the legacy here is many of his students and students of his students. And our guests today on Live and Local have been Richard Hurdle, one of those students, and Leonard Rummery, one of those students of students, in this case of Dick. And as Dick said earlier, there are many other students of Bill Miller who are teaching in other places.
Oh, all around the world and performing professionally.
And we played at the outset of the show, Nathan Gunn, who's the most famous one that I know currently, but there are probably many others.
Many.
Who are out there famous now or famous then, and we'll... who's your most famous soloist, Dick?
In the concert?
Yeah,
the most famous.
That's sort of a
well, actually,
that's sort of a.
There probably isn't anybody that we would consider famous, but they might be infamous after the concert.
After the concert. Well, we appreciate your coming in, Leonard. Really, run down quickly. What's on the program?
Right. Well, the first. After the solos and duets and quartets, which are on the first half of the program, the first choral piece, which is after intermission, is Cantata 106, Gottes Zeit ist die allerbeste Zeit,
by
Bach, J.S. Bach. It's a very early cantata, around 1707, when he was in Mühlhausen. So it's not the usual structure, and the orchestration is originally two recorders, now two flutes, and some strings. Then we're doing the Cantique de Jean Racine by Gabriel Fauré. I love Fauré's songs, and this is a lovely piece, also an early work by him. And then finally, excerpts from the Gondoliers. This appears to be Gondolier Summer. I know John Frayn played the operetta on his show a couple of weeks ago, and it's in Bloomington, of course. And we're doing a lot of the very first scene, and then a couple pieces from later in the work.
And a number of solo pieces in the first part of the show as well. Well, it should be a wonderful concert. I'm glad you all were able to come in, and hope you raise lots of money for the Miller Scholarship at Uni Place Christian
Church. Thank you. We're hoping. But in the meantime, we are just having a great time preparing this concert.
Which is ultimately what it's about. It's going to be a mostly sunny afternoon. High today, 87. Tonight, mostly clear with a low of 62. Tomorrow, partly sunny and more humid. The high near 90. And Sunday, mix of clouds, hazy sunshine. The high also around 90 degrees. We're at 84 now. This is WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.